Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly program where you, the fans, can ask questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek Coach Bruton's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the coach discusses with us the very exciting game against Aurora this weekend. He tells us who he would put on the Lakeland University Mount Rushmore for football, and would the coach make friends with somebody that had a cat? Let's find out on Muskies Matters.
Well, let's welcome back Coach Bruton. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
You know, not a lot. Just looking forward to Aurora. You know, this one. You know, we're 3-0 in the league. They're 3-0 in the league, and it's gonna be a big challenge. And we know the kind of this is the game that Aurora. You know, we tied for the conference championship with them last year. You know, but beat them pretty good at our place, and was kind of a game where we played probably our best game of the year last year, and Aurora was a little banged up and didn't play quite as well and got away from them. But, you know, we understand that, you know, they've had kind of now a full year to look forward to this game against Lakeland and this moment. And, you know, they're going to be ready to play, and our guys now need to go down there and match that intensity, match that focus. And that's a real challenge, especially with a long bus trip. It's going to be our longest bus trip of the year as far as a one-day trip. It'll be an early morning for us, but you know, those are all the things we got to get through to get ready to play Aurora. So we're looking forward to the challenge, and it's going to be a really fun week for us.
I would take it you see this from their perspective as this is kind of a grudge match.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you know, Coach Ponks has done a great job at Aurora. When he took over, it was a little bit of a rebuild. You know, they went 1-9 his first year, and you know, really had to rebuild the talent on the roster. And the second year, they were just 3-7, but they took us to overtime down there, and quite honestly, probably should have beat us down there in 2015. And you know, last year in 2016, they had another shot at us and got us at our place, and we played, like I said, played really, really well, and you know, beat them pretty good. But you kind of look at this, and this is kind of the game that in Coach Ponks' 4-year kind of rebuild, this is the game that everything's been building to. And that's the way we look at it from their standpoint. Is I'm sure they told their kids that they can get to this point in the season where this game against Lakeland is, you know, with this magnitude, they felt pretty good having it at home, and they should feel that way. They're a good football team, so it's, you know, it's a challenge for us to kind of go down there and make sure we match their focus. And we haven't faced too much adversity the last couple of weeks, and we got to understand there's going to be adversity on Saturday, and we have to be able to respond to it, especially in the, you know, in a hostile environment. We're expecting a really good crowd down at Aurora, and I'm sure they're going to be fired up, and it's going to be a really cool atmosphere for our guys.
Well, before discussing that game more thoroughly, let's look back at this past weekend with Wisconsin Lutheran. You downed them 48-0. Do you feel that was the most complete game by your team this season?
It was definitely our best defense effort. You know, we played really, really well defensively, and we're getting better every week defensively, and that's exciting. I thought our guys on defense really executed the game plan. You know, Wisconsin Lutheran does a lot of motion and a lot of different window dressing to get to some pretty basic looks, and our guys really, you know, really played their keys, didn't get distracted by the motion, didn't get distracted by the different movement and stuff like that, and really played well, and then just kind of gained confidence throughout the game. You know, we held them to 120 yards, which is obviously really good, but only about 10 of those came after the half. So the second half, we really played with a ton of energy, and you can just see our guys defensively gaining confidence. Offensively, you know, quite honestly, we didn't feel like we played very well. And that's, you know, we put up 48 points, we rushed for over 400 yards and all that, but just felt like, we didn't block quite as physically on the outside with our receivers. We were disappointed in that. Thought Michael made a couple bad decisions and just, you know, at times rushed things a little bit, didn't take what we were getting, didn't see things quite the way, we wanted them to, and we feel like we can play better offensively, you know, but anytime you can beat a conference opponent and a team that's been a real rival for us, 48-0, you feel good after the game. You know, we're not taking that for granted by any means, but we do feel like we're capable of even playing better.
The defense simply didn't allow Wisconsin Lutheran to move the ball very effectively and made some really big plays when it was necessary. What were some keys that you thought that really helped them to shut down their offense?
Yeah, you know, a big key for us was just trying to contain their quarterback. And you know, last year, as we mentioned last week, you know, Pat Mathiasen had a monster game against us and rushing and passing. And we really focused on making sure that we had bodies on him, had guys assigned to him, and make sure we wanted to hit him as much as we could, and obviously hit him between, you know, legally between the whistles and that kind of stuff. But we wanted to make sure that he felt it after the game, and I thought we did a good job of that. You know, we got bodies to him. I think we sacked him 5 times, and you know, hit him probably another 5 or 6 times after, you know, as he was throwing the ball and got good pressure on him. And I thought we just got him a little bit out of his comfort zone, and we took away the quarterback run game. And I thought, you know, we're still a heavy man coverage team, and I thought we did a good job in the secondary of just kind of shutting things down and making him hold the ball on passing situations. And, you know, our guys are just playing faster. They're starting to see things. They're starting to pick up their keys. And some of those young kids that early in the year, those first-year starters that were, you know, were kind of just getting their feet wet are now becoming more complete players, and that's exciting.
Deontay Moses seems like over the last couple of weeks, like he's just everywhere for your defense. What are you seeing in him that's allowing him to have so much success?
You know, the thing about Deontay is he just plays so hard. You know, we've had some kids in the past that have played really hard all the time, and he's one of those guys that just, you get great effort. You know, a lot of the plays he makes are not first effort plays or second effort plays and third effort plays, but he just plays so hard all the time. You know, you look at it, and Deontay's a 155-pound linebacker, and a lot of people look at that as a negative. And there's times that, you know, his size hurts him a little bit. You know, guys get hands on and they really move him. But there's other times that his size is an advantage, just because, you know, these offensive linemen aren't used to blocking a kid that's nearly as quick as he is, that has the ability to get small to avoid blocks. And he's just getting a feel now for playing linebacker, where he has to be. And then he's one of those guys who just has a knack for not getting blocked. And that's you know, that's a pretty good you know, skill to have when you're a linebacker. You know, the other thing I'd say about him is he closes ground faster than really any linebacker I've seen, and partly because he probably in most teams' defense wouldn't be a linebacker. He'd be a safety or a cornerback, but he closes the gap to the quarterback so quickly, and you'll see it when we watch film. You know, there's times that this week, for instance, the quarterback's rolling out and thinks he's probably going to have another second to throw the ball, and Deontay can close that distance so quickly. And it, all of a sudden, it's like the quarterback's shocked because there's a guy in his face and hitting him. And, you know, he had three sacks this week, and they were all kind of the same variety. It was kind of those second-effort sacks where, you know, the defense line does a good job, and the quarterback's holding the ball, and he becomes our press guy to the quarterback, and he just closes, you know, 5 to 10 yards so quickly that a quarterback doesn't expect it. So it's been great to see his development. He's playing better and better every week, and he's just one of those guys, like I said. He was a starter for us last year at safety, but now playing linebacker, you can see he's starting to pick up the keys a lot faster and just starting to play a lot faster.
Desmond Eddie rushes for 236 yards on just 18 carries, including an 83-yard run for a touchdown. What about his performance?
Yeah, he was great. He's so explosive. You know, he's so explosive. He's averaging over 10 yards a touch this year. You know, I think he's scoring a touchdown one out of every six times he touched the ball. You know, both as a receiver, we're playing him in the slot a lot. He's in our empty set. He's playing in the backfield. He's just so explosive. And you know, I think he's one of the fastest. We got great team speed, and he's as fast as anybody we've had here now or in the past. Just a really explosive athlete, really natural runner. Was a little banged up early in the year, had a knee injury through camp, and kind of slowed him down. He was our starting tailback last year and was a first-team all-conference player for us. But you can see now he's healthy and he's seen it again. He's getting the reps. You know, the biggest thing for him was early in the year. He was playing on Saturdays, but he wasn't practicing as much, so he wasn't getting as many reps, you know, seeing the run game. And a lot of times as a running back, it's feel. You know, you're feeling where the cuts are going to be or where the seams of the openings are going to be. And now he's getting those reps and he's starting to play. You know, he's dangerous because I think as a defensive coach, if I'm game planning against Lakeland, every time he touches the ball, I'm worried they're going to score a touchdown, and we're going to score a touchdown. And that's exciting as a coach of the Muskies, and it's got to be frightening for the opposing team.
I would assume as a coach, it's extremely satisfying to know that even on a day where Michael Whitley doesn't have a particularly big game, your offense still puts up 48 points.
Yeah, that's exciting. You know, we're so much more complete as a team than we've been in the past. You know, we're not relying on you know, just throwing the football or Michael to run with it. And, you know, we have so many different weapons and we're so diverse. And you know, a lot of that's with our offensive line. Our offensive line was outstanding again. It's the second time this year we rushed for 400 yards in a game. We didn't give up a sack, even though we threw it 30 times. And, you know, they're playing really, really well. Coach Wellman, our offensive line coach, is doing a great job with those guys. And we're so much better up front than we've ever been. And that's really, you know, probably the most overlooked part of this whole thing is that, you know, with all the skill guys get all the attention, Michael gets the attention, and all that is deserved. But our offensive line has been really good, and it just allows us to kind of take what teams give us. There's a time, you know, a couple of years ago where we had the skill kids on the outside and we weren't quite as good up front. So teams could give us, you know, a box with light numbers, and we still couldn't run the ball as effectively as we are now. And Now, if teams want to do that, you know, we'll gash them for 8, 9, 10 yards of carry. I think we got three backs right now averaging 7 yards of carry, which is really impressive. So that's really the exciting thing. We're so diverse, and we're not relying on Michael quite as much.
Who were your offensive, defensive, and special teams players of the game?
Yeah, I think, you know, offensively, you know, Dez Eddy, it's got to start with him anytime, you know, 200-plus yard rushing game. He had 190 rushing in the first half and really kind of put the game away with the 83-yard run that I think made it 28-0. That was kind of the big one that kind of broke their back. Defensively, Deontay had three sacks. He was all over the field, you know, played really well. Oman Smothers had another interception, but just in general, I thought our defense as a whole played really well. You know, there wasn't really one guy you'd point out. It was just as a whole that the defense played really well. And special teams, you know, we didn't punt again, which was great. Anytime you don't have to throw the punt team out there, you feel pretty good. So that's been a good thing. I think Conrad Foss, you know, a couple weeks ago, he set the school record for extra points, career extra points, and he did a really nice job kicking the ball. It was a pretty heavy wind down there. And he did a nice job of kicking the ball and placing it where we want it. And we did some squib kicks into the wind, and he executed those very well. And so, you know, that was exciting to see. The other kid I'll mention is our backup kicker, Andrew Cowley, from a special team standpoint, came in. And, you know, with us having a comfortable lead, he got to kick a little bit and made his first career extra point, which was really exciting for us. But, you know, he also kicked off twice and had two touchbacks. So that was really cool to see from a freshman coming in that situation, kind of the first time playing on Saturdays. And he kicked the ball really well.
I want to ask about one series of plays from that game in particular, is where Wisconsin Lutheran punts the ball down to the two, then they take a pass interference penalty, and then Desmond runs for 83 yards and a touchdown. I wonder, from a coaching standpoint, how crushing is that for the opponent when they think they're going to get incredible field position and then they're giving up a touchdown two plays later?
Yeah, it's obviously tough. You know, I think anytime you get yourself in that situation and you know, they made the decision to punt and you feel pretty good about where you're at, and you're thinking defensively, if we can get a stop. You know, the other thing was we were at that time we were heading into the wind, so you think like, okay, if you can get a stop, get a three and out. You know, our punting game has been very suspect all year. It's no mystery. We got a guy punting, Juwan Turner, that really isn't a punter. He's a receiver for us, and he's punting. So I think they probably felt pretty good. If they can force a three and out or force a stop, they're going to get really good field position. And you know, we're pretty aggressive in those situations when we're backed up, and we took a shot downfield. And, you know, they held our receiver pretty blatantly. And the next play, you know, does that. He's just special. He made a cut that, you know, when you see it on film, you kind of look and you think, you know, there's not many guys around that can make the cut he made. And, yeah, all of a sudden, you know, we're excited, and it's pretty deflating for them. Like I said, I think that was kind of the backbreaker for them in the game. It just seemed like after that score, they, you know, you kind of feel their energy sink a little bit, and you felt like our guys felt pretty comfortable. But, yeah, that's deflating. Anytime you're put in that position, especially when, like you said, you can pin the ball like that, you feel pretty good that your defense can go out and make a play.
You take on Aurora this week, which will likely be for the conference title. So what are some of the keys you see in this contest?
Yeah, you know, we've talked a little bit about just the travel and just kind of the preparation. That's been, you know, we always talk, you know, we give our guys four or five keys to victory every week. And the biggest thing for us is number one, is just handle the travel with maturity. You know, it's a challenge when you got to wake guys up, and we'll get guys up before 7 o'clock, and we'll be on the bus by 7:30. And, you know, it's a challenge for guys to get off the bus with energy. And we'll do some different things to try to make that happen. And, But I think that's the first thing, is just understanding the level of intensity that Aurora is going to bring this game. Understand that this is a game that Aurora has been pointing to for a long time, and it's one that we have to take with the same sense of urgency. And I think that's going to be the first key. And on the field, you know, Aurora's got a really good running game. They have two really, really quality backs. Connor Olson is a really quality back. You know, they have some weapons on the outside, and you know, they're starting a freshman quarterback, so you know, we're expecting they're going to take some shots down the field in the passing game, but we're also going to get a heavy dose of run game, and I think they'll try to control the football. And you know, we're expecting that you know, we're going to get kind of everything they have, so any trick plays they got, any special teams trick plays, and just being very disciplined on the defense end. And then offensively, it comes down to doing what we've been doing, taking what the defense gives us. And you know, we're not quite sure if they're going to give us a four-man front or a three-man front, but we've been preparing for both. And, Just kind of taking what they give us and attacking the way we've been attacking. You know, like I said, some games teams have given us that light box and have said, hey, you know, go ahead and run the ball on us, and we've been effective doing that. And other teams have come out and said, we're going to bring pressure and do different things, and we've hit more vertical shots down the field in the passing game. And we just got to be ready to take what they got. And then the last thing we talked to our guys is about playing with poised emotion. So playing with great emotion, and we talk all the time about playing with emotion and playing with passion for the game, but also playing with poise. You know, we understand that we're going to face some adversity in this game, like we talked about, and we have to be able to respond to that adversity. They're going to be very, very excited early in this game, and it's not going to be a game where there's going to be a knockout punch thrown in the first quarter or the first half. You know, those things are going to be won in the second half, and understanding that we have to be able to wear them down, and we have to be able to play with that emotion for 60 minutes. And when bad things happen, we got to stay together as a group. You know, they're going to have, like I said, a nice crowd, and we're going to have, you know, our guys. We're going to have our team and probably some parents and a very limited crowd. And we got to stay together and kind of do it as a team.
So a long bus ride like that, trying to get the energy up, you're going to lead a sing-along for like 3.5 hours or something?
We usually let our guys sleep for a while. So they'll all bring pillows, and they'll be, you know, by the time the bus leaves campus, they'll be asleep, which is fine. But then we'll wake them up about halfway through the trip. We'll have some food for them on the bus. They'll be able to eat. To try to keep us, you know, we usually try to eat about 3.5 hours before kickoff. So that kind of keeps us on the same routine. We'll have some, you know, box lunches and stuff for the guys. And then we'll try to just get some energy. So sometimes we'll play music on the bus, or, you know, we'll try just to get the guys up and just get a little energy going on the bus. So generally that means we'll wake them about an hour before we get to the school, so before we get to Aurora. And that should give them some time just to kind of, get the energy going a little bit before we get off the bus. The last thing you want is guys sleeping right up until the time that you're getting off the bus at 10:30 or 10:45, and then you're a little lethargic in the locker room, and everything just kind of slows down a little bit. So we want our guys, we'll give them some time to sleep, and then we'll say, let's go. And our guys, you joke about a thing, it'll be a sing-along. Our guys will be singing, and they'll be dancing a little bit, and there'll be some good energy on the bus, so it's always fun.
Aurora has just 11 sacks this season, which makes me believe, or makes many believe, that they don't really get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Is that a deceiving statistic, or is this an opportunity where you're thinking Michael Whitley's going to get some time in the pocket?
You know, it's a little bit of both. They haven't brought as much pressure as they've brought in the past. So they haven't really blitzed a ton this year. They've been more of a base defense. And part of that, I think, is just a philosophy thing. You know, I think philosophy-wise, they like playing their base, and they got a really good defense. They're leading the conference in defense right now. I think part of it is also they haven't played a lot of teams that really have a dynamic passing offense. You know, you look at the conference schools they've played so far, and they've played teams that haven't thrown it quite as effectively, with the exception of maybe Concordia Chicago. They've played teams that have been a little bit more run heavy. And then in the non-conference, you know, they played Alma, and Alma's a little bit more of a run-heavy team. Carthage has been a little bit more of a run-heavy ball control type offense. So, you know, they've played more teams that are a little bit more run focused. So I think that number's a little bit skewed. You know, they got, you know, tremendous talent on defense, and it's going to be a really good challenge for our guys. And I think a lot of it is just they haven't seen probably quite as many pass attempts as some of the other teams in our conference have.
Well, let's head to fan questions this week. We start with Christian, who says, who would you put on the Mount Rushmore of Lakeland football during your time as a coach here? Which four players you coach would be on that monument? And he says, remember, only four.
Wow, this is a great question. We talk about this. We'll try to make our all 22 teams. So I've been here 11 years, and we'll try to go through and say, okay, who's our three best receivers, or who would be our quarterback in our all 22 team. And but to name four is difficult. But I would start. You know, I think number one, I'd start with Keeslo Smith. Keeslo was a receiver that graduated last year. He's the school's all-time leading receiver by over 1,000 yards. You know, set the school all-time receiving record, you know, in 22 games or 23 games. So just a dynamic football player, most talented football player I've ever seen at the Division III level. Was just a great speed, great balance, toughness, just an outstanding player. Ended up in rookie minicamp with the Vikings last year and was that quality of player. So I think I'd start with Keeslo Smith. You know, usually when we do this, we don't try to include current players, but I think we'd be foolish not to put Michael Whitley on the Mount Rushmore. What he's meant to our program the last, you know, 4 years or 3.5 years now, and just the things he's done, two-time conference player of the year, the numbers he's put up. You know, he'll be first or second in every passing category at Lakeland by the time he's done here, total offense numbers, all that stuff. And he's closing in on most of the conference passing records, touchdown records, total offense records, and he'll set most of those in the next couple weeks. So I think Michael Whitley would be number two. I'd probably go John Wagner, was a linebacker that played here my first 2 years, so in 07 and 08 was his junior and senior year. Just an outstanding talent, was conference player of the year defensively in both 07 and 08. Just a really, really great competitor, a great athlete, a guy that's, you know, now in his early 30s and is still playing semi-pro football and playing on multiple teams, but just a guy that loved the game of football and played with great passion. And then the fourth, we've had some good ones. We've had multiple guys that are conference players of the year on offense or defense that won't get mentioned. But I'll go with Tony Fowler. Tony was a 4-year starter for us at safety. Just a great, great competitor. Probably we talk about Deontay Moses, about kids that play hard. We've never had a kid that played harder than Tony Fowler. You know, played for us as a 4-year starter, like I said, on defense, played on every special team. He's a kid that would play 100 or 120 snaps in a game with all the special teams and play with great effort. Was a multiple-year all-conference player. So I'd probably go Tony Fowler just because of the way he played and what he meant to our program from 2008 to 2011.
Amanda would like to know, she says, it concerns me when listening to these NFL players talk about that they simply don't care whether their team wins or loses as long as they get yards and touchdowns for themselves. It must be so much more gratifying to coach at this level.
Yeah, you hope you coach a program or you coach a team where guys don't, you know, the stats don't matter. You care about wins and losses. And, you know, one of our core values is selflessness. And we talk about that all the time. You know, it shouldn't matter who gets the numbers. And when you're doing things the right way, you know, the numbers are going to spread themselves out. There's going to be one game where Des Eddy has a great game. And the next game is going to be Michael Whitley. And the next game is going to be somebody else. And when you have a good team, that's the way it works. And, you know, I think there's selfishness on every team. It's not something that's, you know, just at the NFL level or just at the Division I level. There's times we have selfish players, but you try to coach that out of them and you try to make sure they see the bigger picture. And we've been fortunate to have good kids that it hasn't been a huge issue. But I'd be lying if I said we don't have guys that don't ask to see the stat sheet after the game or don't know their numbers. And you know, I think there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with caring about your individual numbers as long as it's not going to get in the way of the team's success, if that makes sense.
Terry would like to know, who were players you admired in football growing up?
You know, growing up as a Bears fan, I was a big Walter Payton fan. I was a big Jim McMahon fan, so those were kind of my my two guys growing up. So I, you know, kind of the when I first started watching football, I was young. I was, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, but I remember crying uncontrollably when Walter Payton fumbled in the 86 playoffs, and you know, Bears won the Super Bowl the year before, and we're going to win it again, and Walter Payton fumbled twice in the fourth quarter against Washington in 86, and they got beaten. I remember my parents couldn't control me. I was crying uncontrollably because the idea that the Bears wouldn't win the Super Bowl was just foreign to me. It was kind of the second year I'd really watched football and followed football, and the Bears won the first year, and I kind of figured they were always going to win the Super Bowl. So that's probably the two guys I'd say I really watched, and they were kind of my two favorite players. And you know, as I got older, there was other guys that I liked watching. I liked watching Barry Sanders. I liked watching some of those guys kind of in the 90s. But those are kind of the first two.
So Walter Payton is the best running back of all time?
I think he's the best running back of all time. He's not the best runner of all time, if that makes sense. So I think if you're looking complete running back, I'd go Walter Payton. If I was looking just as a runner, I'd probably go Sanders.
Okay. Ollie would like to know, he says, in listening to you discuss players from other teams, you always mention that player by name. I hear a lot of coaches, especially at this level, talk about opposing players and they talk about them by their number. You show a lot more respect to me, but I wonder why other coaches just identify them by their number.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have a good answer for that. You know, we talk about guys with our players by name. So we'll talk about, and I don't know if there's any particular reason why we do it that way. It's just the way that we've done it. So I don't know if other coaches are trying to be disrespectful or trying not to use the name, but I think it's just something we've always done. And when we talk to our players and we go through our scouting reports and stuff like that, we use the players by name, and it's just something that we've always done. So, yeah, I'm not sure if I have a good answer for that.
I wonder if sometimes coaches don't want to personalize the opponent. Does that make sense?
Potentially. Yeah, potentially. I think that's certainly part of it. And I think sometimes there's coaches that are uncomfortable talking about other players on other teams. They're talking, they don't want to give too much information out and things like that. And we've always been pretty open, not that we get a ton of media attention or anything like that as a Division III school here in Wisconsin, but we've always been pretty open about things. I mean, everybody has film, and everybody else, there's not a whole lot of secrets. Aurora knows that we're gonna throw the football on Saturday, and they know what we're gonna line up in, and they know that defensively we're gonna run, cover one, and we're gonna bring some pressure. And it's not a huge mystery at this point, 8 games into the season. So I think sometimes coaches just get a little bit, they're a little conservative. They just don't want to give a lot of information. And not that we're going to tell them our first 10 plays or anything like that on the podcast, but we're not, we're not unwilling to share information, I guess.
James would like to know, would you want to play for yourself if you were a player?
Yeah, I'd love to play for myself. I think our staff in general, and not just myself, I think our staff does a good job of really trying to teach. We're not huge yellers. I think we're guys that coach with energy. And I think the biggest thing for us and the thing that we try to convey to our guys that we care, we care about them more than just them as football players and them as a quarterback or as a running back or a defensive player. We care about them as people. And I think as a player, that's all you're looking for. You're looking for guys that care about you, guys that are out there to teach you, and then we try to do our best to keep the focus and the attention on the players. And, I think that's the other thing. So, I'd like to say I'd like to play for myself. I played for really good coaches in college and high school that did similar things. And, I think we try to mold our program and our coaching styles, the way we want to be coached ourselves.
Robert asked, he says, that Bears defense looks a lot better than everybody thought, doesn't it?
It sure does. It better, because that offense is still terrible. But the defense has looked good. I thought they played well last week. I was following a little bit, but the game wasn't on TV here in Wisconsin, but I followed a little bit on my phone. And, yeah, it looks like they're playing well. And like I said, that offense is still miserable, but the defense is looking good.
Rick asks, he says, I know you probably don't have much time to follow college football outside of your own conference, but who do you see winning the big game between Penn State, Ohio State this weekend?
I'm going to go Ohio State. I think the game's at Ohio State, so as long as that is correct, I'd go Ohio State. I did get a chance. Usually the games that we see, we'll see the Saturday night game of the week, so whatever the big ABC game is, or kind of the big games on Saturday night, usually we can catch those when we get home. And I was able to catch Penn State last week, and they looked really good and really impressive. And what they did to Michigan, I thought was impressive. But I think coming back off of that game emotionally and having to travel now on the road, and obviously Ohio State's playing a little bit of an elimination game for them. So I'll take Ohio State in a close one. I think it looks like Ohio State's playing better every week. And so I'll take Ohio State. But, yeah, we try to watch. I'm a sports fan, so I want to watch college football. And I seem like I we get to watch the Pac-10 games at 9:30 at night. I usually fall asleep to those on Saturday night. But have got a chance to see some of those, the ABC-type games. We'll watch them on the bus ride home. I'll get on my phone and get to watch ESPN app, and you'll be able to see some of it. So we probably watch a little bit more than you think.
You'll get to watch after you're enjoying your big victory on Saturday, so that'll be nice.
That sounds good. Yeah, it sounds good.
Kendall asks, don't you think that LeVar Ball is really putting his son in a bad situation, running his mouth all the time? Shouldn't this guy just shut up, since he is not the one who actually has to do the job?
Yeah, I think there's a fine line between being a proud father and being an idiot, and he's definitely walking that line. So I think there's times where it's all just publicity. It's all, what's the line? There's no such thing as, bad publicity or whatever. And it seems like he just, he wants to keep himself in the news, and he wants to sell shoes and do everything else. But, the guy, he's crossing the line, and he's probably putting his son in a bad position. And nothing wrong with being a proud parent, but there's a line where you can't cross, and I think he crosses it quite often.
Dave says, you brought up last week when you were talking about the other coaches and you making lists. So what is your list of the best to worst planets in the solar system?
It's funny because our coaches, especially Coach Wellman and Coach Tresky, they listen to the podcast every week and give me a hard time about things. So we actually talked about planet rankings a little bit last week or this week. So I'm going to give you a top five list. I think we haven't gotten all the way down. Some of these planets have no redeemable qualities, but I think Earth number one has got to be at the top of the list. Obviously, we're on the Earth. Looks like just the resources that Earth provides got to make Earth number one. I'm going to go Pluto number two. Again, there was some controversy in our office about whether or not Pluto's a planet. I'm still saying Pluto is a planet. I like the resiliency of Pluto. Got told it wasn't a planet. Still kept fighting to get planet recognition. So I'm gonna go Pluto. Next, I'll go Saturn. I'm gonna take the rings of Saturn. I think are very impressive. I think rings are a good redeemable quality for a planet. So I'm gonna go Saturn. After that, I'll go Mars. I think at some point in the next 50 years, we're going to be, on Mars, or we're going to be taking trips to Mars. I think as our resources begin to be depleted, we're going to look to other planets. So I think at some point, we're going to be on Mars. And then number five, I'll go Jupiter. So read this week, we did a little research as we were doing the planet rankings, and saw that the number of moons, I think Jupiter's got 69 moons, which is pretty impressive. So I think moons or rings or redeemable qualities are something that gives your planet a leg up on the other planets. So that's going to be the top five list.
No love whatsoever for Mercury and Venus. Unbelievable.
Way too hot. We talked about it. I don't know what you're doing there. It just seems miserably hot.
Don asks, would you ever consider making a close personal friendship with someone who had a cat?
Whew. Yeah, I mean, I'd be friends with you if you have a cat. I'll be judging you the whole time, but I will definitely be friends with you. We talk a lot about, we have a couple single coaches, and we'll talk about what are their deal breakers, so what are something that, if you're looking at a significant other, what's something that's a deal breaker? And, there's, smoking for a lot of us is a deal breaker. I would never would have dated someone that smoked, but, for me, if I was dating a girl and she owned a cat, that's it. That's the end of the discussion. So I think with a significant other, no way. Obviously, knowing that you'd be over at her house or apartment at some point, I wouldn't be able to do that. I would not be going to your house if you own a cat. But yeah, you can have a cat. I'll be judging you and wondering why you have a cat the entire time.
Darren has a couple of questions for you. The first one is, what was the line that you used with your wife to introduce yourself to her?
Me and Brenda got set up. So we got set up by some mutual friends. So great friends of ours, Chad and Steph Schreiber. Chad was the volleyball coach at Lakeland here for many years, and really, really highly successful coach. And his family and Brenda's family went to the same church at the time, so they were friends. And we got set up. So there really wasn't a line. It was it was a great setup, and things worked out. And called her up, and we went out a couple nights later, and had a great first date and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't like there was a line in a bar or anything like that. It was a setup, and again, I thank Chad and Steph for that. I was a little hesitant to be set up, and Steph, Chad's wife, sent me a very strongly worded email about the fact that I needed to go out and call Brenda and go on this first date. So I did it, and the rest is history.
Darren would also like to know, how many dates did you go on with your wife before you knew she was the right one for you?
Wow, that's a tough one to answer. We went out, and I'll kind of tell the story very quickly. We went out for the first time on a Sunday, and then we went out again on Monday night. We were playing softball, so we had a softball team among many of the coaches at Lakeland and all different sports, and Brenda then came out Monday night and watched us play softball, and we'd go out after the game, and so we hung out a little bit there, and then I was gone then starting that Tuesday for about 2.5 weeks. I was out of town and was back home in the Chicagoland area. It was kind of our break period. It was in kind of the beginning of July, so it was kind of our break coaching-wise, so I was gone for a while. So we kind of had two dates back-to-back nights really quickly, and then when I came back, went out and kind of that next weekend spent time together, and I think that was kind of the time that I knew. We had talked kind of throughout the 2 weeks. While I was gone, talked every day, and we're texting and calling as people do now in relationships. And I think once I got back, so it was probably third or fourth or fifth date. It was somewhere in that range that I wasn't going out and buying a wedding ring yet, buying an engagement ring, but I felt pretty comfortable that this could be the one. So I'm sure Brenda will be listening for my answer on this one. But yeah, I think it was probably sometime around that time. After coming back and getting to spend time with her again, it was probably third or fourth date, somewhere in that range.
Did you tell her at that point that you knew she was the right one for you?
No, there's no way I was giving up that information. So, not a chance. She'll probably tell you it was like the second date. She knew pretty quickly, I think, that she thought I was the one. I don't know what the hell she saw in me, but glad she did, and glad obviously it's been great. We've been married about 4.5 years now, so it's been a great 4.5 years.
The future head coach of the Fighting Irish. So that's what she saw.
Absolutely.
And why is it great to be a Muskie?
Yeah, just, you know, what an opportunity for us this weekend. It's an exciting time for our football program. You know, we know what's at stake, and we told our kids all week, this is the reason you came to Lakeland. You know, you could have went somewhere else and maybe played a little sooner or been somewhere else and not played in big games like this. And I think anytime your goal as a team is always just to get to the end of the year where you're playing in meaningful games. And we get the opportunity to do that, and you know, it's going to be a heck of a test. And, you know, it's kind of just, you know, for us, it's the next step. It's the next step for our program to get to where we want to go and get to our ultimate goals. And we're looking at it like that. So it's really exciting. I also like to give a shout out. Our volleyball team on campus has won 4 straight. So they're going to the conference tournament as the 5 seed. So it's exciting. You know, just from an athletic standpoint in general, it was a great weekend for us last week. And our volleyball team picked up a couple huge wins that kind of cemented their spot in the conference tournament. So that's been exciting for our team as well. You know, our guys love supporting the other sports. So, you know, Lakeland volleyball's got a starting the conference tournament on Tuesday. You know, we got a huge game this Saturday. So just an exciting time for Lakeland athletics.
That is excellent. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland University coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.